This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The European Union, NATO, they are not the same organizations. However, right now, both are pressed by Ukraine conflict and the extreme headlines in Europe about energy shortfall. It comes to all nations now to find a solution for the electricity bills that are arriving in the restaurants, in the cafes, in the homes across this vast geography, the European Union, flowing into the NATO parts that aren't part of the EU. I'm looking at the UK and its new prime minister. However, I welcome Judy Dempsey to speak to the EU in particular. Judy is at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She's the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe, based in Berlin. Berlin is often the center of the story because of the engine of European Union and the banking of European Union in Berlin. Judy, a very good day to you. I begin with your thoughts about what the EU is challenged with. Yes, of course, energy. Yes, of course, Ukraine. But you also point to a momentary election. We're looking for results at the end of this month. In Italy, Giorgia Meloni, leading the Brothers of Italy, which is identified as a right-of-center group. And that alone introduces the possibility. Do you measure that the European Union is having second thoughts after six now in the seventh month of Ukraine about this endless support for a war that is threatening the livelihoods and the ability of Europe to sustain its population? Good evening to you.
Thank you, John, for having me on your show. It's always a great pleasure. Okay, let's break this down. Let's take the energy issue. This energy crisis has been really, really positive for the European Union and also negative. Positive because it actually shows that the European Union member states, particularly Germany, can no longer depend on Russian gas. It shows, it confirms that Russia uses gas as a geopolitical instrument. And it shows that if the EU finally doesn't break this umbilical cord, actually, they will never have their own gas diversification. This is what they're doing, and Germany particularly is doing this too. This is quite important. The downside is that can we react quick enough before the winter sets in early spring to deal with this energy crisis? I'm actually a little bit more confident. There's an awful lot of doom and gloom here, but the storage tanks are being filled up in Germany. There's LNG coming from the United States. There's gas coming from some countries, some authoritarian other countries are going to make an awful lot of money out of the EU woes, but gas is flowing into Europe. And frankly, I think Europe might come out of this. The third very important factor is that the Europeans use too much energy. They keep the lights on. The Germans don't have a speed limit. They have street lights on. They just don't have these automatic switches that should be normal in a sophisticated society that actually supports climate change. So altogether, I'm on the more positive side that Europe will come out of this. The big uncertain issue is, you know, how will the consumers and those less well off will manage?
Yes, energy poverty it's right now. It's been with us for weeks, Judy, and it's a puzzle. What changed in these last days? Was it the Gazprom cutoff? Was it the 6 months of the war? Because you and I have been talking about the concerns about the energy cutoff for as long as the war has been underway. Is there a political conversation that's new in the European Union? Let's start in Berlin, but also mention Italy. Are there doubts that the EU will hang together? And that is why the grave concern now.
Okay, the far right and the far left are trying to make hay here in Germany over the energy costs for less well-off people. The German government just unveiled a 65 billion package, which will lead to some subsidies. It's something, it's important, it's psychologically important. But I think given the subsidies and the infrastructure and how wealthy this country is, I think they will weather this storm, but they have to be very, very careful how the far left and the far right-wing political parties could use this. In Italy, It's a bit like Germany, the far left and the far right in Germany are pro sympathetic towards Russia. Italy is in a very unstable way as it faces elections. And we don't know how this is going to go, but certainly there's a kind of, you have to be very careful how you use the term, but far right wing parties coming up. And as a founding member of the European Union, Italy still hasn't found its real strong, stable place inside the European Union. So we're in for a lot of uncertainty in Italy, which is highly unfortunate at this particular juncture.
And the question then in Germany, let's focus on that. Your vice chancellor, Robert Habeck, I believe is the way you say his name. He's the Green Party. And the Green Party is not far left. It's center left. I understand. But it's difficult to know where they are in this energy story. For example, you cite that Habeck and the chancellor, Mr. Schulz, were eager to negotiate for additional natural gas from North America, from Canada, for example. At the same time, the Green Party is hesitant about the transition period where nuclear energy might be necessary or where I believe the coal phases might be reawakened. Is that a matter of political conversation now in Germany being resolved?
It's a huge political conversation, particularly among the Greens. And this is a serious conundrum for Robert Habeck, a very talented Green Minister for the Economy and Climate Change and Vice Chancellor. So on the one hand, he supports opening up some of the coal faces for a while. On the other hand, he says, well, let's not prolong the nuclear energy plants. Of course, when you make a decision to close down a nuclear energy plant, it requires maintenance and oversight and so on. But we're living in a major energy crisis. And the fact that the Greens opt to reopen coal fields and they won't prolong the nuclear plants, it's an extraordinary contradiction, because actually this would be quite easy to do and will resolve some of Germany's economy problems. One thing your listeners should know: Germany does not have an energy problem. If it did, it would not be exporting gas or energy and electricity to France. France has the big energy problem. Its nuclear plants are completely not so much dilapidated, but they are not given proper regular maintenance. So France is actually relying on supplies of energy from other EU countries. I mean, if there's any crisis that should lead to solidarity and sharing, this should be it. So this is the bottom line, that there is enough energy going around. But on the other hand, many countries have just neglected to upgrade their facilities.
In listening to a conversation with the CEO of your biggest natural gas company, one that's been in partnership for 50 years with Gazprom, Klaus-Dieter Maubach, who was very convincing, saying that we made a mistake. We did not plan. We did not prepare. We do not have redundant facilities to bring in a natural gas. We're now facing wholesale market 20 times what it was a year ago. We understand there's an aid package coming from the central government and that we can get through this together. Similar to what you're saying, Judy. But then there was this look to the future, and Dieter Maubach said that the relationship with Russia is broken. He didn't use the word permanent. He said years, broken, and that we must establish new energy sources around the world. Is that a general opinion? And is that a presumed opinion of all parties now, that Russia and Germany are broken in the Ostpolitik, or is there still reluctance to acknowledge that?
One hopes that this old-fashioned Ostpolitik is broken. But frankly, if you're running a huge energy company like Uniper, who, by the way, his economic woes are also caused by hedging their bets in terms of prices. It's just not reliance on Russian gas. But the fact that they didn't strategically look at the situation in Russia, especially after 2014, especially with Putin at the helm, especially how Gazprom has actually used energy as a political tool, whether it was in Bulgaria or Romania or Ukraine or in other countries and in Germany, surely as a CEO, you could have had a strategic outlook on diversify. And now this big company is relying on the taxpayer to pick up the bill and keep it in business. Why? Because Uniper is such a big supplier and it needs to have money to buy gas from other countries.
China, you mention in your essay that the EU is not, the way you put it was, it doesn't do strategic thinking all that well. And part of the strategic thinking these last years here in the United States, I'll speak to what I have watched very carefully, is we've moved from buy China to don't buy China. I'm being very this side, that side of it. Buy China to don't buy China. Is that now in Germany? Is that now in the EU that China is not a trustworthy partner?
It hasn't got to that level because the trade between China and the European Union member states, but particularly Germany, is very, very high. But there is now a rethinking going on about the dependence on China for so many things, for bilateral trade particularly, but so many imports and exports. The point is, you can't just say one day China is no longer a reliable partner and we don't like what they're doing with human rights and we don't like their policy in the South China Sea or the policy with Taiwan. So do you have a policy to replace this? And secondly, how is your economy going to survive in the short term, if you are actually going to reduce your trade ties with China? Do you have the infrastructure back home? And it raises the whole relationship with China is related to actually not only the dependence on China, because it's an enormous market, but actually have the Europeans outsourced more than they should have? And instead of actually building up their own kind of high-tech, electronic and industries to become much more competitive instead of being vulnerable and dependent, just as they became vulnerable and dependent on Russian gas.
You call for a meeting for a joint China policy. Is that underway at the EU?
Well, if you're talking about the joint policy, the joint policy, it should be with Canada, it should be with Australia, it should be with the United States. It should be a Western strategic, political, economic, trade and social response. The Europeans cannot do this alone. And America bashing China is not a solution to the long term for global stability or stability of the West. What we need is a serious rethink on the Western model of doing business with China and how We do have to get on with China. We have to coexist with China on some level. You just kind of block out a population of 1 billion people on what's going to happen in the years to come. But the West must have a united, concerted policy on so many issues of China. It's just not intellectual property rights. It's just not human rights. It's the whole idea of accountability, of global trade, of commercial regulations, of the whole gamut of how the world economy functions.
I'm speaking with Judy Dempsey, who is the editor-in-chief of Strategic Europe, which is a Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. And she's based in Berlin, and we're addressing the story right now of the energy challenge, the war challenge. We're going to turn to NATO, however, because Judy has asked many of her correspondents a very challenging question. Is NATO doing anything for Ukraine? When we come back, I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.